If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
A day doesn't go by when someone doesn't scream at me on social media telling me that it's time I step down, telling me, let somebody else do this thing I do. And so, my friends, it's time. No, not the column, not the podcast. You'd have to lop my head off, Ned Stark Game of Thrones style, to get me to give up the column in the Tribune or the Chicago Way podcast here on WGN Plus. I'm not going anywhere if I can help it. But I will step back on something else and let others have a chance on something important to me, vitally important. It's that Easter lamb. I've been doing it for years now, and a lot of you have gone along with me every Easter, reading about it in the column, hearing about it on this podcast. But I'm going to step back. I'm the proud father of two fine young men, Spiro and Peter. Are honorable and straight-backed. They're the kind of guys who look at you in the eye when they shake your hand. And I told them, guys, it's your turn with the lamb. So they'll have to make sure Casey's Market puts it right on the spit, and of course they will. And they'll have to season it and insert the garlic and the salt and the pepper, the lemon halves inside the cavity, have it sewn up. And most importantly, they're going to have to figure out the fire. The fire is theirs too. To manage the coals, they're not called live coals for nothing. To get those live coals to do what you want, not too hot, not too cold, that's their job now. And they use their hand as guide. Not as a thermometer, but they'll put their hand over the fire and they'll count. And they'll learn by how it feels. This act of roasting the Paschal lamb is as old as the Passover itself, older than Easter, which we Orthodox call Pascha, and what Jews call Pesach. And even older than that, older to the time before history, the time of the first men, who learned it at the mouth of their caves and stone huts. That smell of smoke and roasting meat, and maybe a wood pipe, like the clarinets I love to hear so early in the morning on Easter. The songs of the Greeks, my people, the mountain Greeks, not the island Greeks for you tourists that go see the islands. I'm talking about the mountain people. They roast their lambs at Easter, and then they began their revolution against the Ottoman Empire. And the time for kissing the hands of the Turkish Pasha was at an end. And it was freedom or it was death. And all that, tradition and religion, blood feuds and the Son of God giving his body and blood to redeem us of sin, all of that comes together for me, one thought and many offshoots, as that lamb, that Paschal lamb, turns. It's been that way for me. For my sons, it'll be different. But I'll step back. Oh, I'll watch, and Betty will tell me not to butt in. And I won't. But I'll be there on the edge of things if they have any questions. And they will when they put their hand over the coals to judge the heat. Is it hot enough, Dad? Is it cool enough? I'll let them decide. Because life is a consequence of hands. Jeff Carlin is in the house. Mr. Carlin, the producer of the Rokon Show. With Anna DeVolantis on WGN. And our guests include, of course, Will Lee, the three-eyed raven of the Chicago Tribune, and Jamal Green, defending Kitten Fox to me, as Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot surveys the downtown wildings over the weekends and sees her mayoralty in the balance. It's always in the balance, Lori. You're the mayor of Chicago. And this is the Chicago Way. On WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
You know that Jesse Smollett story won't go away, but another story won't go away. And they kind of both involve Kim Fox, and that's the Wildings downtown. If Lori Lightfoot doesn't get a handle on it, her mayoralty is toast. Some will argue it's only about racism. Some of that is, right? Some people see crowds of black kids coming down from the South Side, and if they're racist, then racist stuff comes out of their mouth or into their head. But some of it isn't. Some of it's just like what Jeff Carlin said the other day when we had Eddie Johnson on the show. What are you going to do about the kids coming off the L? And what about that doctor at Northwestern Hospital? Remember him? Little Asian guy? He wasn't racist, but the kids beat the hell out of him, came off the red line on Chicago Avenue, found him, and beat the living hell out of him, and took his cell phone as he was walking, just blocks from the hospital and his home. Now let's talk to Jamal Green. All right, I'm sitting here outside of Starbucks looking at seagulls, 87th Street, talking to Jamal Green, activist, who's moving into a new phase, I think. What do the activists do after an election? And how does he and other people like William Calloway carve a space for themselves in a political Chicago when you have the old-time African-American activists like Bobby Rush and Jesse Jackson fighting for relevancy, and where does all that fit? So good morning to the hello and welcome to the Chicago Way, Jamal Green.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, you heard it, so what about it?
Well, you know, I think that people understand that their time is almost up and they're looking for new voices and looking for young people to really step up and step into the forefront. I mean, you got to look at William Calloway, who is still in a dead heat battle with Leslie Harrison in a race where he's got well over 6,000 votes, as she got 6,000 votes, and which within a 150 vote range, and the precincts are missing votes and things of that sort. So when you look at an activist who can run for office against an alderman and get 40, get 50% of the vote, you know, that says a lot to the political landscape. You know, that says that his voice brings power and influence, and people want to hear him, right? With me, I ran for mayor, and
you were on the Chicago Way that launched you.
Yeah, and when I ran for mayor, I shifted the conversation and was one of the, or probably the only grassroots person in the race who really understood the streets. And thousands and thousands, of course, I withdrew before I went all the way, but thousands of people supported my campaign and our vision and our message, which said a lot to the now incoming mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot. And so when you have activists who are beating the pavement, gathering support, organizing, we're forced to be heard by the people that are in the most powerful positions in the state.
To what end?
Well, you know,
I mean, is it just the Jamal Green show, or is it something else?
No, it's about shifting policy, right? It's about getting them to, you know, with Lori Lightfoot, you know, I endorsed her, and we had a conversation, and I had her adopt many things that I thought were great, that I thought was a first step.
Like
right?
What?
Like, you know, pushing her to really have great policies in regards to reentry. Right. And having an office dedicated to reentry citizens. That means those who have a background or those who have a felony coming out of jail. So
I see Jamal Green or Jamal Green's mom on the street. I rob her and then now and maybe hurt her. But there'll be an office from Lori Lightfoot to give me a benefit.
No, that is not what that means. What that means is when you go to jail and serve your time and you're done, when you get out of jail, there are programs there to make sure that you don't do it again. So to lower the recidivism rate, right? So that's what reentry policies are for, is those who don't have housing, those who don't have jobs, but they have a record and there's nobody to give them a chance. So they go back to the same nonsense that they did that got them in where they are in the first place. So that was a big thing, as well as make sure that there was a committee where young people, where activists can advise her on these policies. Instead of young people being on the outside, they can be at the seat of the table pushing her to do things, right? Making sure that we treat violence as a public health crisis and giving her more policies surrounding how do we tackle violence in the city of Chicago, and embedding the Office of Violence, the Office of Gun Violence and the Office of Reentry Citizens on the South and West sides, and pushing those resources to these communities and organizations. So it's about shifting policy. It's about pressuring officials to do the right thing so that we can see change in the neighborhoods.
But I saw you up there at the news conference for Kim Fox. You weighed in on it. And Kim Fox is a protege of Tony Preckwinkle. Tony Preckwinkle, or agents on behalf of Tony Preckwinkle, played some really rough games with Lori Lightfoot, particularly. Tony Stark came out saying, I congratulate her for being gay and open about it, and it, like a dog whistle to every black South and West Side church in the city. And the second thing was there was a lot. So how do you defend, you know, coming up to defend Fox in that context, where does that fit in?
So Kim Fox is her own person. She did not weigh in on the mayor's race. I have no involvement. So I don't look at her as a protege of Tony Preckwinkle. I look at her as the person that I've known for many years. I've known Kim Fox since before she ran. You know, me and Kim Fox have always had a great and close relationship. And I think, I believe that she is a genuine person, because that's what I know. I know her to be that way, you know. And
how did you get to know her?
Well, you know, I got to know her by communicating with her a lot. By sitting down, having smoothies at Ain't She Sweet Cafe, right? You know, by really getting an understanding of who she was and who she was going to be once she took office. So we built that relationship before she was state's attorney. And, you know, I really believe that she's genuine in what she says. And she has made good on a lot of her promises since, you know, taking office. And I give her credit for it.
It's good to make relationships with people, right? It's good to reach out to them. Like a middle-aged white guy reaching out to Jamal Green months and months and months ago, when my first inclination was stay away from this guy. And I realized that you and Mr. Calloway, to me, represent the future of a particular dialogue that's needed in the city of Chicago. But let's get to another thing that involves Kim Fox, Lori Lightfoot, you as a youth leader, I guess, if you want to put it that way. And that is Kim Fox is, her policy is to not lock people up. I mean, that's her, what she's criticized for from the cops. And you aptly pointed out the other day that they're all a bunch of white guys standing up there on the stage against her. But the other criticism behind that is that she's trying not to put people in jail for the broken windows policy. For example, Rudy Giuliani credits cutting down the violence in New York or crime in New York by a policy of broken windows policing. So you catch a guy who's a shoplifter, you put a case on him. You don't let him walk, and then he goes and robs somebody. That that policy leads to a lot of people who are incarcerated, many, many people incarcerated. It kind of shatters the future for young people who get a criminal record, but it does maintain order, at least in the short term. Now I see in the city just the other day, perhaps Lori Lightfoot's greatest challenge, Jamal, right now coming in. There were groups of 400 to 500 kids downtown. They were running around, probably most of them black, most on the from the Red Line, Southside kids, coming downtown just like we all did, but this got violent. And these are black kids, so they're going to be looked at different by the majority of white people immediately. And then you have violence into it, and that's a tension. News media doesn't know how to deal with that because we don't want to. You've understood this early on. The one hook you can throw at a white journalist, and land them in your boat is to call them a racist or hint at it. Right. And they freak out.
Right.
So they don't want to touch it. But it's happening in real terms. So to simplify that, you've got the two policies in conflict, the broken windows policy and the I don't know what the Kim Fox policy would be called, but let's say a more social justice policy. And then you have Lori Lightfoot, black woman, having to maintain order and not wanting to lose downtown, because if the perception becomes that she can't handle downtown, people just start fleeing with property, with taxes going up and all that. It's just a bad thing. So you're in the middle of all this, and it took me a long time to state it because I want to state it fairly and accurately, but I also want an answer. So what is the answer?
Well, you said a lot of things that definitely needs to push back. One of the things is, you know, I'll start with Lori, since you ended with Lori, and I'll come back to Kim. You know, we're talking about losing handle of downtown, right? You know, why are we not? The conversation should be, how do we get those young people into programs or centers in their own communities that are safe havens? That's what the conversation should be.
Yeah, we used to have something called like a park district, for example.
Well, you know, the park district needs to definitely do more, and it needs to be open. Let me tell you what those kids did. The flyer says, put the guns down, bring a pillow.
What flyer?
The flyer that the kids made to organize that event.
Right.
Those kids went down there for a big pillow fight. It said, put the guns down. I got the flyer. Put the guns down, pick up a pillow. And so what that says to me is that the organizers of this event aren't violent. These aren't people who are saying, oh, let's group up and let's fight or have a gang. These are people that are saying, let's go somewhere safe, downtown, and let's have fun.
Was this your idea?
This wasn't my idea. These are young kids.
So who organized this?
These were young teenagers. And the fact that a young teenager can organize hundreds of kids to come down there to downtown and say, put the guns down, bring a pillow, that should tell you that those young kids have a lot of talent that needs invested in, and those young kids have a voice that we need to listen to.
Did they bring pillows?
They brought pillows.
I didn't see a lot of pillows, man.
Listen, I heard and I saw some pictures, but this is what I will say. Yes, it went south, because what you have is when you have 500 black kids going downtown, and it's the truth. I'm not trying to play a race card. You know, the police officers bring hundreds of police officers, and they have a response. But let's look at St. Patrick's Day. Let's look at when the Cubs win. Let's look at when the Sox win. When there are white people downtown getting drunk, fighting the police.
The scariest thing is when you got these white suburbanites coming downtown. You never know how many cars are going to turn over and burn.
Not just white suburbanites. it's definitely a lot of white Chicagoans. I'm just alarmed that we're not really, the media and this whole firestorm are not talking about when white people are downtown tearing up downtown.
When do they
do it on St. Patrick's Day. They do it when the Cubs win. They do it when we win the Blackhawks championship. They do it when we win the when the White Sox or somebody wins a World Series.
I was there for some of that, man. I'm a Southsider originally and a White Sox fan. I didn't see. Here's the thing. I didn't see people. I didn't see groups of people charged with fighting other people that weren't involved in it.
I saw.
And in the context of what we're talking about, you got to be legit on this, okay? The context is some of these kids in the past have got, maybe not those kids, but other kids like them from the South Side, get off the red line on Chicago Avenue. And immediately you have cops right there saying, get back to the South Side or whatever they're saying. And people get, some people have gotten roughed up in Streeterville. That's a fact.
And that's very, you know, very racial, you know, what you said.
What's wrong? What's racial is the groups that like slap a doctor around because he's a little fat Asian guy. Is that racial? I don't get it.
Listen, let's talk about what's real here.
Right.
And the couple of things that are racial. You can't, number one, you can't compare another group of kids to these group of kids. All right. All kids are not the same. Okay, you can't just say, oh, because we got a teenager involved in this, that these teenagers are going to be involved in it as well. These teenagers organized an event that said, put the guns down, let's come hang out downtown, not let's go fight downtown. Now, what happens is when you have a big police presence with a lot of black people, that always causes a response. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, You talked about these white parades and things that we have downtown where there are these people are getting drunk. They are fighting. They are catching aggravated batteries against police officers. I saw those charges. And so because they get crazy drunk and crazy happy, they start fighting with the police and they start going to jail. Let's raise some stuff about that.
Right.
Well,
we do have history of white people getting drunk, fighting with the police Chicago.
Thank you. And so we need to be talking about how do we get these kids to have their pillow fight and have their positive gathering that they were trying to have in a community center. But the problem is we don't have many. Or at a school that's open. The problem is school's not open at that time. So we have to have a place that's open throughout the day for these young people.
One thing I think we're in agreement on is that there's not enough resources for the young.
Yeah,
and one way to have a to deal with the young, and I've only learned this from my experience as a dad, is to tire the hell out of them. Okay,
yeah, exactly.
They got to be tired from working, but there are no jobs. Number two, there's no park district really.
Yeah,
there used to be a park district when it was a machine park district. The Democratic machine ran it, but that was accused of being racial.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got, instead of a machine park district, you got liberal white lady park district that de-emphasized sports and stuff.
Yeah.
And then nobody went to except, I guess, if you want to sit under a tree and read poetry, but not many people. I'm talking about keeping young men occupied.
Definitely. And Ron was very bad at that during his tenure. You know, He stripped away a lot of funding for after-school programs. He wanted this longer bullcrap school day, even though he didn't have no resource to fill it, instead of having a shorter school day and programs for kids after school to really express themselves. You're talking about arts. These young people, they can get on social media, they can make flyers, they can do all these things. We just saw that with the organizing that. That means that they are good at graphic design. They mean that they are good at organizing events. Interested in it, or these are the young rappers, either young singers or the dancers. Like, they need an outlet, and at that time they should have been involved in programs of that, but of that sort. But Rahm Emanuel disinvested from those programs, so we got to have that.
What about Lori Lightfoot and Eddie Johnson and the issue of the downtown that I talked to you about? we can come at it from different perspectives, but really I think we're coming at it from the same perspective, just a different flavor to it.
Right.
And the perspective is, in my view, if she doesn't, if she's not perceived as getting a handle on this, or if, say, there are other organizers out there in the city not positive, and kids start coming down to raise hell, that's not going to be good for her politically.
Well, we need to stop thinking about what's good politically. Let's focus and not be political with everything and allow stories to try to navigate how she should play things. The reality of the situation is she needs to pay attention to the neighborhoods. She needs to pay attention to investing in these neighborhoods so that people can have those resources here at home, so that people can go to schools near their home that are great quality schools and or have mental wellness centers in these communities or have programs in a park district with great outreach. She must invest in these neighborhoods. Then you won't have 500 kids coming downtown. Then you won't have crime pouring over into other communities. And I think that she is going to do a lot of that. And I'm going to help push her and advise her as much as I can to do some of that work. But we need to stop talking about downtown. Downtown is okay. Then we need park districts that have boxing rings and that have different ways that young people can not only express themselves but get out their anger, right? There's a lot of anger in these communities because, you know, they see how disinvested things are. They have friends that are being killed each day. And the clearance rate is 15%, so murderers are still roaming the streets.
And PTSD in every school.
Yeah. PTSD, I call it CTSD. It's continuous. It's not post because this is happening every single day. And so with all of these things going on, and plus their family life or their parents may not be there, or their parents may be on drugs, or they're trying to raise themselves, there's a lot going on in these communities that people don't understand, and they need that outlet to express themselves and get that pain out.
You know what? Sitting here talking to you, Jamal Green, I realize one thing. I have to meet your parents, because I got to know what your life was like. Are your parents around?
Yes.
What do they think of all this?
They are proud of me, but very scared a lot.
Well, my mom used to say, "Who starts your car in the morning?" Do you have somebody starting your car?
That's yeah. Well, let me say this: they're because they are scared of, you know, me being as vocal as I am, and I get the threats that I do from.
Welcome to the club.
The conservative side, and
I get it from your side.
You get it from my side,
and from the right wing side.
So you know, but you know, I believe in standing strong and firm in what I believe in, and I've been, you know, I am 23 years old, and to be in a position where, you know, I'm listened to by the establishment politicians and those who have been in power for a long period of time, you know, is a great thing, and I'm going to utilize my influence to continue to move forward policies as I have in the past, and to get rid of political corruption as I was had a hand in beating up Rahm Emanuel's career, you know. And
just
saying,
make sure that Lori takes. I know we got this. You have to take a certain side on the downtown, and I'm just being provocative on it. But I'm telling you, she's got to be seen as taking control of that thing. That's all I'm saying.
And
for her best interest.
And taking control doesn't mean, oh, more police, doesn't mean more charges, doesn't mean we're going to continue to lock people up. That is not how you solve crime. We've been trying to do that for many years now. Taking control of it means going to the communities, figuring out the needs, figuring out why these kids are going down there in the first place, figuring out why there's crime.
The same reason I went down.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I don't have money, and I want to see what it's like for people that have money.
Exactly. And so we must build up their communities and make their communities a downtown and give them something to do in their communities. And if she do that, then downtown won't have to worry about anything.
All right, then. Jamal Green, thanks for being on the Chicago Way, and happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter to you as well.
Just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty.
All right, and now, of course, let's get to the main part, okay? Forget the politics because we've got the we're going to geek out in our nerdgasm right now. Jeff Carlin and I love our next guest, our friend, colleague, William Lee, Tribune reporter. You can follow him at Mid-Noir Cowboy, correct?
Absolutely.
And, he covers Boncourt on the weekends. And
no, that's my favorite.
That is just...
Live tweeting of Boncourt is absolute entertainment.
Because Will Lee should be a novelist, and he's getting all these novels in a sort of Dickensian Will Lee thing. In the meantime, though, he's also the three-eyed raven of the Chicago Tribune. Will Lee, what's with Game of Thrones? Fantastic!
Can I start with one thing, though?
Please.
The one thing that really bothered me about episode two,
right?
The thing is when Arya asks Bran, well, can the White Walkers be killed with dragon fire? And Bran, the three-eyed raven, says, I don't know. Anyone's tried. And that scared the hell out
of
me.
No one's ever tried.
The three-eyed raven, who knows everything,
right,
and is the real X factor in this entire season,
right,
he says there's something he doesn't know.
Well, here's the thing. Now, she went up in that sort of rocky moment last year, right, coming over the horizon, saving Jon Snow. Mm-hmm. I was like, so, you know, I was crying. You know, it was really emotional. It was almost more emotional to me than Theon and Sansa this year.
Yes.
But didn't she burn? She'd burn no White Walkers?
Correct.
Just
right.
Whites, right?
Exactly.
Well, now, was she...
Meaning the zombies. For
was the question about dragon fire as in the fire or the like the dragon fire that was used to in the Battle of Blackwater?
You mean wildfire.
Wildfire.
Right. No,
okay.
It's all dragon fire.
Okay.
I watched episode 5 times just to make sure.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's
so it's... Because I thought you said wildfire, and that's what my first thought, but then dragon fire, yeah, I feel like we would... We would know that then because
the last long night didn't happen during the time of dragons,
right?
So they those two worlds never collided until now.
But to Jon's point, in the last season when Daenerys does come flying over and when she loses a dragon,
right,
there were whites being wiped out, but we don't know if that would work on white. You have to assume not, right? Because remember the scene at the. When they're the three-eyed raven, and the Night King just walks right through the fire,
and it cools.
But here's another thing. Will's point, which is the Bran Stark face,
right.
Okay? Bran Stark, the things we do for love face. Like he's kind of like, there he was, the eyes of Arya. Remember blind Arya a couple years ago? That was a face. And now it's the Bran face, like the things we do for love. And he has this kind of like wan expression on his face. He's supposed to know Will's right.
But he only knows human existence.
Wait, is this Avengers? The guy with the stone in his head? You know, that knows everything?
Right.
And we have to protect everyone, all the superheroes have to protect the man with the vision, the creature with the vision.
That's correct. Same thing. Same thing.
Right?
Absolutely.
So, okay. So, but if that creature doesn't know everything, what the hell are we dying for, Bran?
But he does know everything. The whole premise is human existence. And so he knows the humans. And so he knows what humans have experienced. And that's why he's important.
One last thing about Bran, our favorite guy. What do you think him and Tyrion talked about during that scene where they ended soon? You know?
There was sort of a jump cut out of that one to Tyrion and... checking out, Brienne, right?
Right. Well, that's the whole thing. I think my theory is Tyrion gleaned something from Bran's knowledge.
It wasn't sex.
No. It'll be about the knowledge on how to defeat it. So even though the whole Tyrion's whole character arc last season, this season, has been losing confidence, he's going to find something to save everybody amongst all of this.
So you think he's going to live? Because that's the main thing of this podcast, I think. Dealing with the fact... that people are going to die. Like in Zulu, there's this great scene where the Protestant minister, Jack Hawkins, is the great Zulu warriors are up on the hill, like singing their Zulu song. They're so awesome. An actual song. And he starts screaming, you're all going to die. You're all going to die. And he's being led away. And I think, okay, who's going to die? Let's be real. What's her name? Missandei?
Missandei.
And
Grey Worm?
Grey Worm. Are they going to go, you know, like, what are we going to do after this is over? Oh, let's go to the, hang out in the winter climates? No, let's hang out on the beaches. I don't think they'll be at Sandals. I don't think Sandals weekend for eunuchs at the beach with their hot girlfriends is going to happen for them. I'm just saying.
She lives, a Grey Worm dies. Maybe she gets with Lord Jorah Mormont, new lord of Bear Island, perhaps.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I just don't.
Wait, are we going to have a battle of the like little kids too? Like, is like the little Bear Island girl going to fight? Like, I'm not hiding down in the crypts, so therefore
she's
I shall fight.
She's one of my favorite characters.
What? Is she dead?
So actually, she dies.
Yeah, I think she dies. I think Tyrion dies saving Bran, like protecting Bran somehow. I think what he gleans from him is something, and then it comes in handy when someone storms the crypt, and because
there's something going to happen in the crypts. Let's just be
absolutely. Oh, you know. And so, but to Will's point from last week when we talked about this, the idea that the Night King is probably maybe doing an end around. I mean, we didn't see anything of him. And
it's not that far from the wall to Winterfell,
right? And they focus so much on that whole concept of the Night King is vowed. He wants to wipe us off the planet, wipe our history, destroy everything.
Destroy memory.
And the first way to do it, like you said, is to go to
Old
the
Town
Citadel and essentially wipe that off the planet. I think that's what we're leading towards. So
in other words, he's like the early Christian zealots burning the Library of Alexandria.
Exactly.
Because that's what it is.
Exactly.
Mr. History over here. The big
Thank you, my son. Thank you.
But look, so the
Civilization with Kenneth Clark and John Cass. Yeah.
The crazy piece is that, so if the Night King isn't there, right, and there's no way to capture, to kill him and eliminate everybody, there's no way they can keep Winterfell safe against that army, because that army is just, it's massive.
If the Night King's not there, they can't kill them all? Is that
correct? Because they can't trap the Night King, essentially, and kill him and kill everybody, as a result, all the whites.
We know Winterfell's going to fall, because didn't we see, like, video of a dead Winterfell?
There are definitely things we've seen, like a smash sort of devastated castle. We don't know.
Right. And remember, the teaser for this season took place in the crypt. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's a
hat tip.
So my theory is that the Night King is, like Will said, is off burning the Citadel, and he's like, I'm just going to wait for my army to essentially destroy Winterfell, but they're going to have a stronghold in the crypt, and there will be a massive, somehow, some scheme. The Night King's going to have to come eventually to the crypt, because Bran will have been...
At God's woods.
Right.
But gentlemen.
Oh.
Does Lady Brienne die?
Oh, you know what? It's got to be. Look.
No.
She's in the front row without a helmet. Two things I need to know about the Game of Thrones. Nobody wears helmets. Excuse me?
Or even hats. No,
and nobody takes a bath. No.
True. No, it's
like,
not true.
I'm sorry. Jaime Lannister takes one bath after he's like, his arms cut off, his arms full of pus. It's cut off, and then he's rolling around in literally shite. And then he takes a bath, but he doesn't wash his hair. You'd think he'd be like, Brienne, can you please get some shampoo for the hair? Not even that.
Oh, now. Theon took a bath, remember? He got that bath. Yeah, there's a reward. Theon, remember?
One bath in a year?
We're just not seeing
it. He was Reek back then. Right. He was Reek.
It's true.
Mitt Romney is Reek. Right.
Yeah, definitely. Theon Reek, definitely dies.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah, Romney. Theon dies.
Oh, wait, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
See, I see Jaime dies saving Brienne.
Brienne?
And that's
first,
how he dies.
Dead or
no, she lives. She lives.
Who are the great characters that we love that are going to die? Because
Tyrion.
Podrick Payne.
Oh, definitely.
You see how badass he is now? Like, you know, fighting and shoving people around and, you know,
get
showing
that look on his face.
Yeah, his hair's longer and he's like, he's got it all now. He has to die.
Which is that why Gendry had to cut his hair? Because Podrick looks like Gendry?
That's a wonderful question, too. Oh, Gendry, I think, lives, by the way.
Yeah, I think so, too. Now, remember the whole show.
He's got to have a baby with
that. Right, exactly.
By the way, okay.
We'll get to that.
Okay, who didn't Google how old she is after that?
Well, in the actual show or
real life? Maisie Williams. Like, I thought I was watching child porn for a second.
Oh, no. She's been, the internet was ablaze when she turned 18.
Well, I'm not going to check her out when she's 18.
No, but I'm just saying, like, that was a big deal among the nerd community.
Why are we so, you know?
Because she's the daughter I never had.
Well, she's a killer. She's a killer.
I would wait. If you could think of a John Cass daughter,
yeah.
Would it not be? Would it not be her?
That's yeah. pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty I always thought that. I mean,
Jeff Conlin, Willie. Okay, go to bed, sweetheart. Go to bed. Wow. Relief for taking Daddy's column away.
Are we still doing dead people?
Yeah, we're still doing dead people. Yeah. So back to dead people.
Yeah.
So here's my working theory on who dies and why.
All right.
Jamie dies somehow, like saving Brienne. That's how Arya gets his face, and that's how Arya goes to King's Landing and kills Cersei. Brienne winds up killing Bronn because, remember, Bronn has been sent to
assassinate both brothers.
Right, ooh. Both brothers. So she winds up killing Bronn because she knows Bronn was trying to kill Jaime, and she knows Bronn was trying to kill
Tyrion. She was there for that conversation.
Right, and so Tyrion, season. And she knows Tyrion, she knows Jaime would want her brother saved even though she hates him.
Wait, she was Brienne was with what conversation?
That was last season when they all wind up in King's Landing to speak with Cersei.
Yeah, and they had the little stare off at the little, like, my podium's just as cool as your podium.
Right, right. Up to when they were getting there, they were all walking together in which Tyrion tries to get Bronn back. They have this whole conversation, very pivotal, and Brienne's just walking along listening to
remember I double it?
Yes.
Double it to be my friend?
Exactly. So I think that she kills Bronn. Because remember, the whole show is like female empowerment. I mean, it really is. It's about the strongest characters.
Why don't we just get it over and get that Deborah Pappas, that state senator, and get all the men castrated right now?
Whatever. This took a weird turn.
Illinois. It did.
Right, let's get.
But so that's what I think Danny dies because that will resolve the Jon Daenerys.
Will they? Won't they?
Trouble for the throne, and I think. Reek dies, if you will.
Oh, he's gonna die.
He's for sure dead. But then I think ultimately Tyrion winds up dying. Because there's no place for Tyrion in the world without Daenerys.
I think Tyrion survives so he can have that special blend of wine that he always had. Imp's Delight.
That's a good point.
I think I wonder if
is it
Sansa
like a Merlot?
Dies. Although I wonder if Sansa survives and she becomes Hand to the Queen or King or whomever.
Clearly, let's talk about the hand issue first, because of two things.
Right.
Hand issue. First of all, Sansa, okay, I still used to think of her as a child, and I have this weird thing in my own mind of how do I deal with her as a woman, just like looking at her. But, I mean, that costume with the armor and stuff, it's kind of hot, I have to say. What, Sansa? Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's
and
cool.
Then here comes, look at Will. Don't give me that three-eyed brown face. So then she comes in, and they have a little sister talk. I love your brother. You love your brother. Yeah. Well, let's be like sisters.
It's a great talk.
And then what happens? Sansa says,
what about the North? What about the North? I can't do a good Sansa, but yeah. To which Daenerys then snatches her hand back. You know what I mean?
Hand of the King?
Because I think she was running up to that whole idea. But I think it's going to be, because I think after Daenerys dies, in my theory, that the idea of a centrally ruling king goes by the wayside, and it winds up being, you get your ancillary kings all working and being in their own realms. And so you have a king of the Iron Islands, you have a king of the North, you have a king of King's Landing. I mean, you have that whole setup starts to change.
After Alexander dies.
Because remember, she was going to break the wheel, and what way to remember her honor is to break the wheel. And then free everybody, essentially.
And then have a... But she thinks they're going to have a better life?
Wow.
No, they're going to have a worse life, because rather than a strong king, they're going to have warlords. It'll be the Dark Ages.
What do you have? Forever. You have stars.
Oh, democracy?
No, but it doesn't...
A republic.
You have strong, localized kings. You know, King of the North, King of the... I mean...
But John doesn't want to be a leader still. I mean, you still get the very sense of this right now, this very late stage in the game. John doesn't want to be a leader at all. He doesn't want to be a king. He doesn't want to have to be... All he wants to do, he will fight if called upon.
Right.
But you don't really...
Killing.
But you don't know... But you definitely know for a fact he doesn't want to be sitting on a throne someplace. He just doesn't have
What is with her deal? Oh, first of all, wait. Can we go back? Rewind, press that little circle that goes back 15 seconds, because after we left Sansa and Danny, they're having their sister talk, and then I love you, I love your brother, I love Coon, I like him, I like all that. Then who? Then madam, the maester comes in. You know, the new maester,
yeah.
The shut up maester. Like, I'm going to kill this baby.
Right.
All the killings of Winterfell that he shut up about
under Roose Bolton. Roose Bolton's the former.
Under the monster. I don't know why she keeps him around.
Because he knows everything about it. He's the only maester they have now.
And Theon Greyjoy shows up, and he comes there as... Queen Daenerys Targaryen's bannerman? Or does he come there as Sansa's, servant? And either way... it kind of freaks out both women, doesn't
it?
It's
neither, really. He comes back as a Stark. Because remember, he left as a Greyjoy to save his sister, but he comes back as a Stark because remember that Jon says, you're both. You're a Stark Sansa said it. You're a Stark and
you're both
a Greyjoy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he comes back as a Stark. And that's why he vows to bring his men to protect Bran.
I'm sure they're happy about it. I'd like to hang out in the dark Godswood too and get killed by the Night King.
By dead things.
Uh-huh.
So many dead things.
Wait. What?
I know.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
So what was your... give me your three most emotional, almost going to cry but doesn't because you're Willy scenes in the last episode.
The last episode.
Besides the nighting, because I choked up
with
the...
Well, probably I'll start with Brienne, because Brienne's knighting, I thought, was... she doesn't smile. She doesn't smile in the books. She has buck teeth. Her only confidence comes from fighting, and the idea that she would get this very thing, because at that time, there are no ladies knighted in real life or in this fantasy world. So the very idea that she would be able to get this thing... this show is really doing everything to kind of bring us the highs, because the lows are going to be real bad. So that's one. The second one, I liked the Arya Gendry thing just because I felt like I think it would be realistic. I think she understands the death aspect of it.
Yeah.
She, way more than most of the people who are there. She realized, and I think it's realistic to say, this is the fight of all fights, more than Blackwater, more than Battle of the Bastards, more than any of it. So the idea that she's kind of doing this, it meant real, because she deals with death.
Yeah.
Thirdly, I don't know. Let's see. Maybe it was the Theon Sansa thing affected me in a way I didn't expect. I didn't expect it to affect me. Yeah, just because Alfie, the actor.
Well, you have a sister.
Right.
Yeah.
You have a sister, and for those of you who have sisters, I guess. I mean, it's got to be. It affected me, and I don't have sisters. All right, but it affected me too. I mean, come on. They've been through so much. The same monster, the same evil creature. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Worse than Stephen King's It, like the clown, but the cannibal clown worse than that.
I think about it, great George R. R. Martin work, and he's just really capturing history. I always think about, the workmanship of just like, we got to flay these people. We got to flay them by 3 o'clock. Yeah. So let's get started,
Yeah, I know. All right, one other question. So we have to be clear, because this is before the episode. You will listen. Those of you who love this podcast will have heard it before the episode. Who dies, Willie?
It's a few minor characters. I think Grey Worm dies. Jaime, I think, survives. If he dies, he dies at a pivotal moment to save everyone else. I think maybe Daenerys dies. I think maybe one of the Stark children dies, perhaps. A lot of this, maybe some of the characters we do love, like Ser Davos,
Oh, minor character? Oh, come on. And what about the little girl? What about the little Shireen girl? No.
Wait, Lyanna or
no? The Shireen girl. The one that,
father's dead. I'd like to fight.
I'd like to fight.
She becomes a white, you think?
And I have things on my face, like a scar. And
I think that
Shireen, who reminds me of me.
Maybe Ser Davos dies saving her.
What?
Maybe
what
about? Maybe
well,
Sir
but
Dabble
see, she's going to the crypt. So again, I think this all comes back to the. I think we're not going to find that out. Whatever's going to happen in the crypt, I don't think it's going to happen in this.
Oh my God! The crypts, and then you know why I knew the crypts are going to be bad, because John says, "Okay, Sam, go to the crypts."
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, Sam. Wait, give me some props. I killed a White Walker and all that, and a fen, and now you're sending me to the crypts with the women and children, and he'll be alone down there. In the dark.
Yeah. Well, Varys also. Do you think Varys dies in this?
No, Varys lives. Varys is like humanity. You know, if he's going to keep going as long as humanity is still humanity. Like, I think he just finds a way.
He's destined to die. He's destined to die, though.
Well, that's true. Destined to die in the land, but it doesn't say how. I mean, he's destined to deny.
You know better than this. Varys can't die until all the stuff about the prince who was promised, yeah. The red witch stuff. He hates them. He hates the wizards.
His part's being cast.
And plus, he has to find out what was said from the fire.
Yes. Jeff gets it. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
So that all has to happen.
I mean, when his parts were cast.
Right, because he doesn't know what the voice told the Meister.
But who does know?
The red witches know.
Because, they all did. They like the brunette one.
We're going to see them soon.
They're coming. We know they're coming because they have to die.
They're going
to
show up like Celtic women, together, like in a group. Like, we are the red witches. You know, like, there'll be about 10 of them in a row, and they'll do some red witchery. Yeah.
That'd be good.
You know?
I like that. I'd love to see the red priests and priestesses of Atlantis finally arriving in Westeros to, you know, raise fire.
What if they find out that it was all Jaime is the prince who's promised, and that they misunderstood?
No.
Like, nah. No? Nah. It's not going to be the misunderstood theory?
It is not.
All right, the main thing you should know is that Varys, at least, is the one character that takes a bath on a regular basis because he looks like perfumed silk
soft and lotion.
Mr. Clean lotion. And even, you know, like right. his skin is so...
Can I ask one more question?
Yes, please.
Will you guys keep watching if Daenerys dies in this episode?
Yeah.
Why, because you mean like I'm such a weirdo that like I'll be upset, or because she's too hot and I can't handle her, the hot chick being killed?
Lovely man, John. I would never think you were as
shallow. Right.
I think the idea, though, of somebody who we followed and like just throughout this entire thing, to see her die in some, you know, white or White Walker thing, is just will be soul crushing, I think.
Yeah. It would be terrible, and that's why it's going to... We just can't throw away the little girl reminding us of Shireen, you know, like, oh, I taught you to read, and I taught you to read. Can you give me some porridge and send me into the crypt so I can die by White Walkers?
I think that was just, you know? I think that's just setting up Davos's death. Like, he's going to be, it's going to make it that much more.
We need big deaths, too.
Well, but so here's who I think is going to die. I think we're going to lose Davos. I think we're going to lose Grey Worm. I think Daenerys is going to be mortally wounded.
Without the sword?
And Longclaw, John's going to put her out of her misery, stabbing her in the heart with Longclaw and pulling it out, and it'll be the bright sword. And
then he gets on the dragon and fights the Night King?
Right.
Like, sword?
Because remember he gets that look when he's angry, and like when he's vengeful, and nothing can stop him. That's when he just starts like slicing through guys until he gets to his piece. So I think that happened. Then he loses his...
Okay, Daenerys is dead. Is Arya dead?
Arya lives because Arya still has to kill Cersei. I think Jaime dies, and I also think who else?
Gendry?
No, not Gendry.
You had a nice night, Gendry.
Yeah, good night. So long.
So long.
And I think Tyrion dies.
So in other words, and I'm gonna read a little bit into what you're saying, Jeff. In other words, everybody who holds an old position who can be replaced by somebody else will die.
Yes.
Like, for Sir Davos, for example, he'll be replaced by Sansa, so he's expendable. He also has no children, so he wouldn't mind throwing himself in to save him, you know, to risk his life for the life of another.
What about Tormund Giantsbane?
He dies.
That was the other one. Tormund dies.
Beric dies.
Beric dies. You know, I'm so over you, Beric Dondarrion, with your little plucky British thing. You're like, you know, oh, yes, we are here on the wall. Let's have a glass of wine now.
How about the Hound?
Can't have him dead till Clegane Bowl, man.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
But this is what they know.
That big dragon glass axe, I want to see him just tear through.
Oh, my God.
You can't melt stone and turn and make it. It's true.
Let's not look at it too heavily. He's right about that.
Here's the thing.
Is it obsidian?
Right.
Don't call it obsidian, then, because you can't melt obsidian.
I was looking at it. Now, you saw it five times. Were they just melting? Were they melting other metals to attach? Because everything you see is affixed, and it looks angular, like it was shipped to be that shape. Because even if you could, if you were melting, it would be smooth. It wouldn't be edged like that. It looks like it was a tool creating those edges.
Right.
So I don't think they were melting. I thought that at first too. It looked like, what are they doing? But I think that was just general blacksmithing going on to make all the weapons, all things attached to That's so. I don't know. Well, you saw it five times. I didn't get that close.
I wonder too if they're treating it or, you know, whatever. I don't know how Reforge Dragon Glass, but you know, whatever he's doing, Gendry's pretty good. I guess he knows that he's like those the ones from Essos who know how to forge Valyrian steel. You know,
all I'm trying to say is this: all this may be true, but they wear furs. They wear leather pants. They don't take baths. Okay, so just think of that. That'll be some. Think of that when you're sad. Like, you're thinking, oh, they're dying, but just think
they're
of
all stinky.
There's got to be stinkier, and they're forging metals and sweating and all that, training with their swords.
And they're not friendly to the dark-skinned strangers in their midst.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a little northern. A little northern, like, who are these black people? Yeah, right. Yeah. That's there.
I think every black person who saw that, it was like, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been to that part of Winterfell before.
No, notice this, though. They did not. Did they say the same? That was the look of disdain to Missandei and Grey Worm.
Yeah.
But when the Dothraki were riding through, anybody look at them?
Better not.
Like you know, badasses? Or were they all like the suburban ladies, like in their SUVs, when they cut off, like me, they give me the finger, but when they cut off some, like, guys in a Chevy that's up and down, like, they don't give them the finger. Did you ever notice that? I'm just saying.
Well, you gave them the finger first, though, John. So that's the
thing. I don't give them the finger because they know, you know what I mean, in my community. But that's another issue.
For another time.
For another time. The main thing is, Game of Thrones, will you be back to talk about this? Because if Arya dies, will you still be there for me, man?
I'm going to be a little distraught. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to be so distraught if any of these main, especially Daenerys, if and when Daenerys dies, it's going to be one of those moments where I'm going to actually shed a tear and say, wow, you know, because they don't make characters like that all the time.
Nobody has this. And the history of TV, imagine like Friends or Cheers. Like, Cheers, okay? Right. Like, I'm sitting at the bar talking with the postman and everything, and all of a sudden, a psycho comes in and slaughters half the bar. Or
different
Friends.
Time. Different time.
Or Friends. Like, the bunch of zombies run through the coffee house and tear their heads off, including the guy that they're telling
Smith
guy.
Had to come by and save them? Or wait,
We wouldn't be able to handle it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough time, you guys. I don't know. I'm going to have to take a moment after that. So if you don't hear from me after we're texting after the show, you'll know why.
That's the destruction of the mythical Westeros. But what about the real Illinois? Next time you hear us, we're going to have the Illinois Policy Institute on to talk about that J.B. Pritzker tax and whether I'm bound for Indiana. For this week, we want to thank Jamal Green, activist, Lori Lightfoot supporter, and Kim Fox supporter, and William Lee of the Chicago Tribune, the true three-eyed raven of the Chicago Tribune newsroom. For Jeff Carlin and me, John Cass, thanks for being here on another edition of the Chicago Way on WGN+.